I'm here on a job site with Tim, who owns his own electrical contracting business.
3 employees and 2 work trucks.
Tim traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance. We're positively here where he needs us most.
They sure are.
With step-by-step help on all his insurance needs, all for shockingly low rates.
Shockingly low, huh?
Just a little bit of electrician humour. Do you get it?
I got it.
You know, it feels like we have a real connection. All right, I'll stop.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Welcome back to Travoltine Presents Easy Riders. Hosted by Jeff Sweeney and Stuart Elmore.
Cover the 10. Enjoy the episode.
Hey, Jeff.
I, the Lord our God, bestow unto you, Moses, the 10 commandments.
Turn that shit off.
The 10 commandments.
I thought I was doing good stuff for you, Jeff. Sorry.
1. Thou shalt worship no god before me. 2. Thou shalt not take the Lord's name in vain.
We're going to do this for all 10.
Thou shalt not murder. Honor thy mother and thy father. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's goods. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not bear false witness. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Remember the Sabbath and keep it holy.
I kind of went into Bane at the end there.
You did go in a little bit of Bane.
That's right, folks. This week we're talking about the Ten Commandments.
Did you go through all 10?
The 1954 Charlton Heston drama about Moses and the parting of the Red Sea and all that. We're not talking about that today. We are talking about the Ten Commandments, though.
Yeah, the just called the Ten.
The Ten.
And spelled out 10. T-E-N, 10.
Yes.
There are 10.
Yes.
Commandments.
So, yes, we're talking about David Wayne's 2007 anthology comedy film, The Ten. It's picking up with Winona, because last week we talked about Scanner Darkly, I believe.
Last week we talked about Scanner Darkly?
Yes. Right? That's what we did? Yeah, we talked about Scanner Darkly last week.
That's right. We did talk about Scanner Darkly.
Which was kind of like an oasis in the desert for this era of Winona. It's still kind of a weird, smaller film that she's in.
Yeah.
But it's by like a director of note, and we talked about it, and it's a good movie.
Yeah.
The 10 is back to kind of the world we talked about with the Darwin Awards.
Yeah.
Where it's not really the type of movie you'd expect Winona to be if her career had followed the traditional path from where she was.
Yeah.
It's that 5 years she took off to kind of rediscover herself, get over her criminal charges and pill issues.
Yeah.
Coming back, and she did the Darwin Awards because, like, she knew a guy in San Francisco who, was involved in the movie.
Yeah.
This feels less like that, and more so like like she's back into the Hollywood sphere, and this is just kind of the thing she can get.
Yeah, and you mentioned back in the Hollywood sphere, what would lead the audience to believe that this movie counts as kind of like back in the Hollywood sphere?
It's like it's shot with an LA studio.
Okay.
First and foremost.
Oh, yeah.
But it also has like real actors in it, you know? I mean,
yeah.
The Darwin Awards did too, but that was like all favors and very small time director.
Yeah. And this has your classic early 2000s cast.
Yes.
We're talking young Paul Rudd.
Yes.
We're talking Jessica Alba.
Yes.
We're talking Famke Janssen.
Yes.
And pretty much any, like, once I've given you those 3 cast members, you could probably fill in who the rest of the cast are for the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's in kind of that vein. What's that other movie 43 or movie 23?
Movie 43, I think that's the name.
Yeah, it's like if I list like the first three cast members, you can guess pretty much the rest of the cast that's going to be in that movie.
It's a movie that Winona's not in.
Winona's not usually part of that cast.
Yeah, Winona's not usually in that area.
Yeah.
There are big actors who are in that area. Like, I would say Paul Rudd's a very successful comedy star.
Yeah.
Him being in this makes sense, even if it is a very small movie. Winona being in this does not really make sense.
Right.
In the traditional, and, you know, had she not have had troubles. But her being in it, it really is like a show of how, where she's at in her career. She's playing, like, the seventh most important character in an anthology comedy film.
Yeah.
Where she's like, gets one segment all to herself. Out of 10.
She gets like 1.5.
Yeah.
And none of which are flattering.
Yeah. I think she's like, this is kind of, she's just trying to figure out what is the new Winona Ryder.
And I think you said it with the first two words. She's trying.
Yeah.
In this movie. Yes, she is trying.
Yeah, she's trying to she's trying really hard, and she's trying to figure out what is the new one on her eye. Is it comedy? Because Mr. Deeds kind of worked for her right before everything.
Yeah.
So she's like, I'll do this comedy with David Wayne. Let's see if that works.
Who's David Wayne?
The director of this film.
And has he done anything?
So David Wayne, the director of this movie, his biggest thing is that he directed Wet Hot American Summer. That was his previous movie to this.
Okay.
Which is like,
that's a title people have heard of.
A disaster when it comes out, but goes like, it makes $300,000. That's how much that movie makes. But goes on to become a cult classic that everybody loves.
Yeah.
Do you know the bit with the prequel series that they made?
That they in real life, they age like, oh, nice, Jeff. They aged like 20 years. And
yeah, they brought all the same cast back 15 years later for a prequel.
Yeah.
That movie is fantastic. Would highly recommend watching.
Yeah, I've heard good things about the prequel.
Yes.
He's done a lot of TV. He did Role Models a year later after this. And yeah, I mean, like you said, he did the prequel series.
Yeah. He's a pretty successful comedy guy. He comes from a comedy troupe called The State. They had a TV show on MTV. He leverages that into directing television, directing film, and has been working ever since.
Yeah.
I actually had the chance to recently work on a project he was directing. So I got to see a little bit of his directorial style and whatnot firsthand. Very nice guy.
Yeah.
You can see his directorial style in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
He's very much like, let's try a lot of things, just like long takes, just yelling like, okay, try this now, do that, do this. This is funny, try that.
Yeah, just quick handed takes.
And this
is
basically a movie that's all structured like that.
Yeah.
Because I found an interview with him about this movie and what like inspired it to come about.
Okay.
Because it's 10 short films that are loosely interconnected, each of them inspired by one of the 10 commandments.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he watched Kieslowski's Decalogue, which is...
What?
which is... Relax. Which is a film series by Christoph... Christoph Kieslowski. It's 10 1-hour films inspired by the Ten Commandments. That's hit. That's the bit.
It's
a 10-hour thing.
It's a miniseries.
Yeah, miniseries. And he was like, what if I did that, but as a comedy, and each one's like 10 minutes instead?
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, I can see that on paper being appealing.
Yeah. And his original pitch was that, what if we do it with our comedy group, The State? And it's just kind of like a sketch comedy show.
Probably would have been better.
Like a sketch comedy show. And then it eventually evolves into a script for a film that they get the funding to make.
Yeah.
He said his goal with this movie is to entertain and to be funny. There's no overriding point or lesson we're trying to teach.
Yeah, you can definitely tell. Yeah. Where some of the commandment bits in this movie, it was a real rough stretch to see like where the commandment fit in and where the sketch came in. Like I'm trying to think about all the different sketches. They all sort of mash together in my head. But like the thou shalt not take the Lord's name in vain. That's the Gretchen Mol, Justin Thoreau,
yes,
segment. Like that one's a little bit of a stretch for like whatever the hell, how that matches with like the commandment name is like a bit,
yeah,
far off.
Yes,
but hey, again,
it's
they're not trying to make like a big, yeah, deeper
not,
meaning
not
point
rocket
behind,
science.
And the covet thy neighbor's goods was sort of in the same vein. Covet thy neighbor's wife.
Covet. I like how you're saying covet.
Covet.
You're saying covet.
What do you say? Covet?
Yeah.
Covet. Covet.
Covet. You will not covet. You're saying covet.
Covet.
You sound like you're really trying to jazz it up a bit.
Well, listen, I went to Catholic school. We had to go over these a million times.
So it's like, you shall not covet.
You shall not. Italian on there?
Yeah, Italian on there.
Roman Catholic, so I guess so.
But
you shall not covet, senor.
A big thing about the funding of this movie is that every actor who's in it gets paid scale. So they all work for the SAG minimum.
Yeah.
This is all like everybody doing it. They're doing it as like kind of because they want to be there.
I texted you this as I was watching this, Jeff, but I got the vibe that this movie was made by a bunch of angry lapsed Catholics. Like, because you see a movie called The Ten, and like, I don't know if we're quite in the God's Not Dead Christian movie era yet, but this is definitely not in the same vein of that.
David Wayne is Jewish.
Wait, but Ten Commandments are also part of...
Yeah, it's part of Jewish faith.
Yeah, part of Judaism.
Yeah, it's in the Torah.
Yeah, so I don't know. Sorry, I have to apologize. I have screaming neighbors.
Do you? Is that what's happening?
Yeah.
That's funny.
We have kids across the street.
Okay.
Well, not my kids. They're the neighbor's kids.
You have kids, but you put them across the street.
My kids go across the street to play like
them.
Real
that's
fucking...
That's where I keep them.
Yeah, I keep them across the street.
But no, every actor who's in this works for SAG minimum as a favor. And like Winona being in this is very much... You get the... Like they didn't ever explicitly say it, but it very much feels like her being like... I'll do that, whatever it is.
Yeah,
I'll get in that.
It's
movie.
On my desk.
I will do this movie.
Her desk is her.
Yeah.
Desk by her.
I'm just trying to get
apartment.
Roles again. Be back in Hollywood.
Yeah,
whatever you can give me.
I have to. You usually do this, Jeff, but I think I can maybe help out with this. But like, I have to commend the Wikipedia writer for
yes.
the 10, because they did write out like in the plot. It is just. All 10 of the segments with a nice, beautiful paragraph summary.
Yes.
That I think
they did a very nice job.
That we can utilize that'll help us out tremendously. Now, I don't think they're in order because I don't think they show the commandments in order, if I'm correct.
It is this order. This is the order that the shorts are shown.
Okay, then it's not the commandment order. Because thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's goods is like commandment 9.
They change up the order of the commandments.
Covet the neighbor's wife is commandment 10.
When Paul Rudd walks out in his green screen room with the big ass stones.
But when Moses found the tablets.
Yeah, he took the tablets and he rewrote them.
By God.
He rewrote them.
Yeah,
yeah.
They rewrote the thing.
Yeah, it's an imitation tablet.
Can we just talk about the 10 commandments for a second?
Yeah. You ever see the Mel Brooks History of the World Part 1?
No.
He gets the 15 commandments, and Moses is running down the hill and he drops one of the fucking tablets and it shatters. He's the 10 commandments. It's a great joke.
That's fantastic. I love that. 10 commandments.
Yes.
Usually brought up in like a Christian or Judaist apologistic argument of being like, look, listen, we have these rules that beforehand we would not have known. And this is what we ground our morality on. The Ten Commandments.
Mm-hmm.
Couple things with that. Number one, could the Jews have made it as far from Egypt to Mount Sinai if murder was fine? Just fine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, was it a revelation that murder was bad? Or like stealing was bad?
This is just them writing all that shit down on a rock, you know?
Right. It's like, but it's like, you get what I'm saying? It's like the argument, it's like, listen, like we have these like things that we now know are bad now. It's like, I think we knew that they were bad before. People just did them anyway.
Yeah, it's just putting it in writing.
Yeah, yeah. You just
it's the formalization of it.
And then
of course they put it in the Ark of the Covenant and Indiana Jones opens it.
And it's just dust.
40,000 years later and the spirits come out and zap all the Nazis.
Yeah, yeah. As you do.
As normally.
They committed a lot of murder.
Yeah.
They broke Commandment 5.
Yeah, the Nazis notorious for breaking Commandment 5.
Everything else they were pretty okay at.
Yeah.
Commandment 5, they broke a lot.
Yeah.
That's not a good thing. But 3 of the commandments are about not actually morality. It's about treating God well.
Yeah. He's got, you know, he's got his priorities in check.
Yeah, yeah. Commandment number 1 is thou shalt not worship any other god before me. So it's like, okay, it's not really a morality thing in how we treat people, but fine. The other ones, don't take my name in vain.
That's what makes this movie so sweaty.
Yeah.
Is because 3 of them are so specifically.
They're very specific commandments.
Yes.
And so how do you like make sketches based on like everyday normal life without religiosity involved?
Yeah.
And then, like, the other 2 are just thought crimes.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like you can't think certain things.
You can't want to that person stuff.
But covet thy neighbor's wife commandment segment, that was pretty funny.
Did I covet thy neighbor's wife?
It's messed up. It's fucked up. But
covet thy neighbor's goods, though. That's my, like,
that's my winning sketch. That is such a Jeff Sweeney segment. That's the Liam Schreiber one,
yeah,
right?
The Liam Schreiber.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's the winning segment to me.
Folks, like, if you ever watch this and, like, listen, if you're a longtime listener of our show, I think we have a few of you out there, maybe. But, like, if you've gotten to know Jeff's personality at all, when you get to the thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's goods, it screams Jeff Sweeney lore all over it.
It's so specifically attuned to my sense of humor.
As well as the honor thy mother and father.
Which one's honor my mother and father?
Oh, you...
Yeah, oh no, that's a good one. That's also a good one.
That's a Jeff Sweeney one right there.
David Wayne, like, specializes in, like, stupid humor. That's kind of his thing.
Yeah.
And I mean that respectfully. I mean that with great love. Like, I'm saying that as a compliment.
Yeah.
Being good at stupid humor is an art form.
It is an art form.
Like, it's the argument between, like, Step Brothers versus some shitty comedy. I can't even think of that stupid.
Like a smart comedy?
Well, no, like a bad stupid comedy.
Oh, good stupid comedy versus bad stupid comedy.
Like, David Wayne is very good at the stupid.
The newest comedy. Dumb and Dumber.
Yes, like Dumb and Dumber 2.
Yeah. That's just dumb stupid.
Like, What Hot American Summer was one of the great achievements of dumb comedy.
Right.
There's like half that movie is them trying to prevent the International Space Station from crashing specifically into their camp.
Half of Adam Sandler's are good dumb comedies and the other half are bad dumb comedies.
It's like low effort dumb comedies.
They're all dumb comedies, but like some of them
it's
are
like
good.
Noted
dumb.
Masterpiece Hubie Halloween versus like
I've never seen it, but I've heard it's a good dumb comedy.
We should watch Hubie Halloween. This we talked about this on the Mystery Show. Oh my gosh, me Hubie Halloween. me Hubie Halloween.
Who knows? Maybe we have to cover that sometime.
We might have to cover that at some point.
Yeah.
There's a chance that happens.
I would say this was a joy to watch. There were some segments I definitely tuned out very quickly.
Yeah.
Then there were some segments that really like, because there are some like Stewart segments in here too. I think you know which ones they are.
This is like,
Jeff is dumb comedy. I am the most depraved humanity comedy.
He likes evil comedy.
I love evil comedy. Yeah. And there's some good evil comedy bits in here. And guess what? Winona's one of them.
Stuart, when you're texting me, this is a little spoiler for later, but when Stuart's texting me, Jeff, what is Winona Ryder doing to that puppet?
Those dogs fresh. We went and saw Bad Boys a couple days ago. We did a Bad Boys marathon, and then we went and saw the newer Bad Boys movies. I guess by the time this episode comes out, though, Bad Boys will have been out for like, 4 weeks by that point?
Yeah.
So most people probably had seen it already, but I'll just say, like, if you haven't already, go see Bad Boys 4 in theaters.
Yes.
Are
those dogs fresh?
Are those dogs fresh?
Yes.
The dogs are fresh. This is the best Martin Lawrence Bad Boys performance ever.
Yeah.
Like, we talked about this on the way out of the theater. But
I just, like, tuned out for half a second to look at a text on my phone, and then I look up, and we're talking about Bad Boys. Did I, like, zone out for multiple minutes?
No, you
didn't. Did we segue into this conversation?
Didn't. But, like, we talked about this coming out of the theater, but, like, the Martin Lawrence of all the Bad Boys. You know, it's really hard to, like, because it's no question from Bad Boys 1 who the baddest boy is. It's Will Smith, right? And then you kind of have to go through the next 3 movies with that kind of already assumed proposition of like, okay, Martin Lawrence isn't going to be the badass of any of these movies because it's always going to be Will Smith. Like, it's always going to be Will Smith. So how do you dial in the gap that Martin Lawrence needs to fill? And I'd argue, like, Bad Boys 1, there's still a lot of gap that isn't filled. Bad Boys 2 starts to fill a little bit more.
Yeah.
Bad Boys 3, he fills in it a little bit more. Bad Boys 4, Will Smith still performs and fills the badassery gap. But Martin Lawrence just doesn't just fill in the comedic gap. He fills it and surrounds the globe with his comedic bits. Yeah. It's like they fine-tuned the Martin Lawrence of it all to be so precise and perfect. Because like he'll be like, "Oh, Mike, you gotta pull over, man." And it's like, okay, this is building up to another like geriatric joke, right? And like, how's good the punchline gonna be? Because in previous movies, like it's been hit or miss. It's like, what, Marcus? Why do I gotta pull over? I need ginger ale. like if I could just say that and laugh, Martin Lawrence says it in the most funniest, humorous way, and then cut to those dogs fresh.
Yeah,
put a little mustard and
put some relish on them.
Put some relish on them.
Stewart was actively a crying of laughter for about 15 minutes at the head of Bad Boys
Before
Ride or Die.
The title sequence even came in, I was wheezing of laughter.
It was infectious.
Again, the movie's already been out for 4 weeks now, but like if it's still in theaters near you, please go see it in a theater. It's worth it.
It's very worth it.
Yeah. Anyway. But,
This movie not as funny as Bad Boys.
We're gonna talk about a bad movie.
Yeah. This movie's like an exact middle of the road 50-50.
Yeah, it's
I like some of the skits. Some of the skits I was like, all right, whatever.
Yeah. And the skits we like probably don't match, but I think for the same amount that it like pleases us, it's about pretty equal. Like I'd give this like a 4-5. Four or five. Like if it's a 4, it's a very strong gentleman 4 in the sense that like there's 4 points of this movie that actually like bumped it up pretty well for me. But then the rest of the movie, I just didn't really.
I put an exact 5. Like it's like.
Yeah.
It's
mediocre 5. Strong
a couple burgers, 5. A couple beers, a few laughs.
Yeah.
That's what this movie is.
Yeah.
Do we want to just go through the skits?
Yeah. And thank you, Wikipedia writer, for, you know, making this the easiest part
I'm going
of
into
jobs.
Edit. I'm going into view history on the Wikipedia. I'm going to shout this guy out.
Yeah. Do they put up like usernames or actual names? I've never done this before. Look up the Wikipedia writers.
So I'm trying to figure out who wrote this.
Do you think when you look up like the Donald Trump Wikipedia page and it says Donald Trump, the best 45th president the world like has ever seen, and then you look at the Wikipedia writers and the latest Wikipedia writer is Donald Trump or like Barron Trump, because Donald Trump probably doesn't know how to use Wikipedia. Don't say there's a slight. I just think he's an old boomer.
There's a little bit of that.
It's an old boomer. He probably doesn't know how to like actually edit Wikipedia. Yeah. He thinks some man in the sky
uploaded
does
a picture of himself on it.
Yeah.
By accident.
Yeah. All right. Commandment 1. Thou shalt worship no god
before
me.
Well, before
that we get Paul Rudd
walking around a green screened commandment tablet. We love Paul Rudd, don't
Everybody
we, folks?
Everybody loves Paul Rudd. Even in his bad movies, he's
a charm.
Have you seen, what's the one he did with Jennifer Lawrence about the free love camp that they go to?
What?
Oh, come on.
I don't know what this is.
No. Don't leave me here. Don't leave me here. There's one, it's like, I think Russell Brand is in it too. Or no, I don't think it's Russell Brand.
Jennifer Lawrence?
No, it's not Jennifer Lawrence. It's Jennifer Aniston.
Oh.
Jennifer Aniston. The one that he did with Jennifer Aniston, and they're a couple getting married and they're on their way to their honeymoon. But then their car breaks down and they stay with a like free love camp or whatever. Not camp.
You're talking about Wanderlust?
Wanderlust.
You're talking about Wanderlust.
Wanderlust. That's what it is. Like even Wanderlust, not a great movie. Not a super great movie. But Paul Rudd's pretty good in it.
Yeah, he's always good.
He's pretty good in it.
From like Wet Hot American Summer onward, he's always good. Clueless. Halloween 6. Have you seen Halloween 6?
I've not seen Halloween 6.
Halloween 6, he plays like the weird creep who lives across the street who's fighting Michael Myers. Very funny.
That's great.
That's like his second movie.
That's great.
But he walks out and he's like, hey, I'm a guy.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you about the Ten Commandments and show you 10 short stories.
Yeah.
And then his wife, played by Famke Janssen, comes in.
Yeah, there's a whole like traveling bit throughout the whole
that
thing.
That he's cheating on his wife.
That he's cheating on Famke Janssen. And then, they have to sort out their marital problems.
Yeah, which and picks up a little bit in between each segment. Yeah. But the first actual segment is Thou Shalt Worship No God Before Me.
Yes. And we start on a plane.
Yes. Where Adam Brody is going skydiving for his birthday, right? They never explicitly say.
I don't fucking know.
John Hamm is the guy throwing him out of the plane.
Yes.
And
it was
then
fun seeing John
he's like,
Hamm.
Yeah! And Adam Brody jumps out of the plane. And then John Hamm's like, you forgot your parachute. And Winona is also on this plane.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh my God, is this for real? Are you goofing me? Are you goofing
is
me?
Is this a goof?
Yeah. And they're like, it's not a goof.
Okay. That's the other segment I know you really like.
Cut to plane landing. They find him embedded in the ground.
And like the doctor.
He's like totally fine.
He's totally fine.
Except he's stuck in the ground like a Looney Tunes.
And he's got
character.
A leg sticking up that's geographically means his leg has to be separated from his body.
And they're like, we can't get him out of this hole.
If we move him, he will die.
He will have to stay here forever.
And the doctor's just cool with that.
Yeah.
They just walk away.
And you're like, okay, how does this at all relate to worshiping another god before me? Anyway, so Winona starts taking care of him there.
Yeah.
And he becomes like a local celebrity on the news.
Yeah.
People are like, oh, that's so crazy. There's just a guy stuck in the ground. She's like bringing in picnics. And then a superstar agent played by Ron Silver shows up.
Stephen Montgomery is his name.
Stephen Montgomery.
Yeah. Because it'll become somewhat important because as more news reporters.
Well, Stephen Montgomery is the news reporter, not the agent.
No, Stephen Montgomery is the guy that jumps off the plane.
Oh, yes. Yeah, you're right.
Yep. And so everybody, like, he starts getting these crazy news stories about him. And then we cut to, there's an agent on the phone about it. It's like, you know, like, Jim, I don't have like another show. Like all these shows are failing. Yeah. We got to find something like a very lovable guy.
No, it has the great bit where it cuts to him and he's just sitting at a desk and he's yelling at two people in the room saying like, your act is old. We can't afford to have you around anymore. And one of the two people sitting there is like a woman in a business suit and she's just writing on a pad of paper. And the other one is a ventriloquist holding a puppet.
Yes.
And you presume he's yelling at the ventriloquist that they're canceling his act. And after he finishes, the woman like starts crying and runs out of the room. And he turns to the ventriloquist and is like, we gotta find someone else for a show.
I'm surprised you give it a five. This movie's full of this like Jeff Sweeney bits.
It's full of good bits, but like
you
the stuff
bits.
In between is not really
do you love
strong.
Bits.
I do love bits.
And good bits have made bad movies good in your book. Yes or no? Wait for the translation.
A five. It's a 5 out of 10.
Okay.
It's exactly the perfect spot to be.
Okay.
And this guy's like, look at this guy stuck in the ground. And so they give him a reality show.
Yeah.
And they turn him into a local celebrity. And he starts like making out with other women who lay in the dirt to embrace him.
The way you said making out with women who lay in the dirt.
It's true.
It's like kind of saying like he's doing like the thing where, you know, he's becoming a big celebrity and therefore he's falling into drugs and sex workers and all that kind of shit.
As he's embedded in the ground the whole time.
Yeah.
Winona,
they built the set around him.
Winona leaves him for a TV anchorman.
Yes. Who we will...
And he starts being known as a, people start calling him a god. A bunch of kids jump out of a plane without parachutes because they think he's so cool.
And they just all die.
Yeah, they all die. And because of his celebrity, he becomes a god and is punished for it by losing his wife.
That's the bit.
That's the segment.
Segment. It's like, you know, thou shalt have no gods before me. A dude jumps out of a plane and gets enough stardom to be considered a god. Yeah.
And then we cut back and Paul Rudd's like making out with Jessica Alba.
Yes.
Who he's cheating on Famke Janssen with.
Yeah.
He's like, oh yeah, sorry.
Cheating on Famke Janssen with Jessica Alba.
Yes.
Okay. Just.
And he's like, oh yeah, we're going to continue making out, but enjoy this next segment on Thou Shall Not Take the Lord's Name in Vain.
Yeah.
This is the sweatiest one.
This is the sweatiest one.
We meet a librarian played by Gretchen Mol. Who's going on a vacation to Mexico.
Yes.
She goes to Mexico where she meets a really attractive local.
Who's played by Justin Theroux.
Justin Theroux named Jesus.
Yes.
And it is Jesus. And she has a lovely Mexican affair with him.
Yes.
But then she has to come back to the U.S.
Like a scene where he like walks on water at some
point. Yeah, he walks on water.
Yeah.
But she has to come back to the U.S. Her vacation can't last forever.
And then she meets up with another...
A shitty coworker.
They get married. They do the classic American tale. But then she's walking one day and she sees Jesus in America. I think he's applying for a job or something like that. And, you know, they meet up. They get, like, coffee or something. They have a nice, like, very friendly conversation. And then they hug each other and say goodbye.
Yeah.
Cut to, she's having sex with her husband.
Yeah.
And in the middle of sex, she yells out, Jesus H. Christ!
Yeah.
And the husband, who immediately is like, why would you say that name? Why would you say that name? And she's like, what are you talking about? I just said Jesus Christ. Because the bit's supposed to be that she's saying
her name,
Jesus' name. But like, yeah.
There's also a bit.
Funny.
There's also a bit that she's like become very pious and religious as a result of this fling and like prays before meals and whatnot. This is relevant when we come back to these people at the end of the movie.
Oh, yeah. And if you think all these segments are just like these people come and go and are gone.
Now they all come back.
They all come back.
Segment 3, Thou Shalt Not Commit Murder. Kind of the easiest one to make a short about.
Right? And you think you'd have to think to yourself, okay, this is going to be like a murder mystery. Some detective's going to get involved.
Yeah. No, there's a doctor and he's doing open heart surgery on a woman.
Scalpel.
And he stitches her up and her husband's in the room and he's like...
Her husband played by...
Who is it?
Played by Jason Sudeikis.
Oh, Jason Sudeikis.
Ted Lasso himself.
And he's like, is it okay? And the doctor pulls up the x-ray and he's like, well, the surgery went okay.
She's like in enormous pain.
Yeah. And like, well, the surgery went okay, but I left the scalpel inside of her.
It's like, why would you leave a scalpel inside of you? It's like, it was a goof.
It's a goof.
It's like, you messed up? It's like, no.
It was a goof. I love goofing.
I goofed. I intentionally goofed.
I'm a goof.
And left a scalpel inside your wife. And then she dies right there.
Yeah.
And then Jason Sudeikis is like, you son of a bitch.
Yeah.
And then he's like, what? I was goofing. And he's like, nurse, would I intentionally leave a scalpel inside of a patient? It's like, yeah, it's probably a goof. It's like, see, it was a goof.
Next thing we know, he's in trial.
Yeah. And the prosecutor gets up. It's like, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, listen, I love a goof just as much as any of the next man. But then, and then the judge is like, all right. Like, it's enough of this.
Yeah.
I'm calling you guilty, sending you to life without parole. And one jury says like, hey, don't we get a say?
Yeah.
And you think there's a moment it's like, are they going to find him not guilty? Yeah. But no, they find him guilty.
Yeah.
And then the judge points out, it's like, are you aware that I just made him guilty? I already did that. It's like, yeah, but like, it's the justice system.
Yeah. Whatever.
So then he goes to prison and he gets put into a jail cell. And then there's a bigger dude.
Yeah.
And who like grabs him by the throat. It's like, you're my boy now.
Yeah.
And then that's...
We cut away.
Then we cut away.
So Paul Rudd and Famke Janssen are fighting because she thinks he's having an affair.
Yeah.
He gestures to the tablet and we come back into Honor Thy Mother and Thy Father, which I have to commend them for coming up with this explanation for Honor Thy Mother and Father.
I have to think it's like, again, Honor Thy Mother or Thy Father. There's a lot of things you could do with this one, right? Yeah. This is also very sweaty. We go to Caucasian couple.
Yes.
And the woman's giving birth.
Yes.
And she gives birth.
With the doctor from the last segment.
With the doctor giving from the last segment. And she gives birth to twins.
Yes.
And they're black.
Yes. Her husband's very white.
But he's also very clueless.
Yes.
He doesn't say anything. And then he has a stroke and he dies.
Yeah. We cut forward like 18 years.
Yeah.
He dies.
The boys are now like 18 years old and the husband dies. And so then it's like after the funeral when the boys sit down with the mother and they're like, Mom, you're white.
Yeah.
Dad's white.
Who's our real father?
Who's your real father? She's like, oh, well, you see, I used to be a reporter and I would spend a lot of time with some celebrities and, you know, I don't want to get too gruesome about it, but I would fuck them.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would have sex with them.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, bomb. It's like, so like, who's our dad? It's like, well, it had to have been this person because it was right around the time when I got pregnant with you boys. And that was Arnold Schwarzenegger. And one of the kids is like doing this bit where it's like, what? Say that again. It's like, do I need to spell it out for you? Yeah. Okay.
A-R-N-O-L-D-S-C.
And he's like, okay, we get it. It's like, no. Let her finish.
W-A-R-Z-N-E-G-G-E-R.
It's like, okay. And then it's like, what? And then I can't remember if they're the ones that say, well, can we meet our dad, or if she's the one that
she's just like, well, I brought him here, so meet Arnold Schwarzenegger. And Oliver Platt walks
in. Oliver Platt
walks in wearing a leather jacket and sunglasses, doing the worst Arnold impression ever.
Like, Arnold, you typically want to do this. Like, mine's not even that good, but you typically want to go deep.
How is Oliver Platt?
Oliver Platt's Arnold says, "Hey, kids, it is me. I am Arnold. Are you excited to see me?" It's like, and they're like, "What?" And she's like, "Well, I couldn't get a hold of Arnold because he's a big time politician now."
So we found an impersonator.
This guy does impersonations at the local theater. Do you ever think about how Arnold Schwarzenegger, if it wasn't for the fact that you had to be born in the U.S. to run for president, there's a very real chance he would have been president.
Yeah.
Like, he probably could have won, like, 2012, 2016 election.
He would have been the first celebrity to become
He probably could have done it.
Yeah. People would have voted for him.
I think people would have voted for him. Instead, he just was the governor of California, and then he went back to making Terminator 5, which is very funny that he just went right back into it.
Very strange.
But he's like, shall we hang out? I can at least pretend to be a dad.
And then they play catch outside, and they're having a grand, lovely time.
They have a very lovely time.
And then eventually...
They're like, you don't have to pretend to be Arnold. We love you all the same.
And then Oliver Platt's like, well, you see, sometimes when I hold a lot of emotions in, and it feels like Arnold, who's so brave and so strong, can say the most vulnerable things. And so when I impersonate Arnold, I feel like I can be emotional and vulnerable. And so he kind of keeps up the act. But then they walk back inside, and then the mother's like, oh, so I have some news. It turns out your real father is Arsenio Hall.
And like, oh, well, that makes sense.
Okay, well, that makes sense. And then Oliver Platt's like, well, what the fuck am I supposed to do?
And they're like, can you do an Arsenio? And he's like, no, but I can do a pretty good Eddie Murphy. They're like, all right, we'll keep you around.
So, yeah.
And then the two kids like get up and they give a little monologue to the camera about how they learned to respect their parents.
Yeah.
And that's how we've got to honor
them. It's like, you
learn
to love your dad, who is an impersonator of a politician, who is your real father.
Yeah. Cut back to Paul Rudd. He's doing some shit. And he introduces, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's goods.
Mm.
Which is my favorite segment.
Is the most Jeff Sweeney segment. Yeah.
Because it's Liev Schreiber and his very nuclear family. His two kids, his wife. We saw him in some...
Because when thou shalt not murder, when the doctor is in the interrogation room, he says, did you knowingly put a scalpel inside the woman? Liev Schreiber is like the detective. He's like, okay, I goofed. Okay.
Yeah, I goofed.
He's like, I gotcha. He clicks off the tape. So we're back with Liev Schreiber, the detective.
Yeah,
he's living in this nice house.
He has this beautiful family,
beautiful house.
He goes out to his window. And he's just like looking out, sipping his coffee, enjoying the morning. And he sees that his neighbor, played by Joe Lo Truglio, has had a CAT scan machine delivered to his house.
He bought a CAT scan.
He's like, that motherfucker. He's getting a CAT scan machine. I got to get a CAT scan machine. So he calls and orders a CAT scan machine to his house.
And then
the one upsmanship continues.
Yes.
And they just keep ordering more and more CAT scan machines.
it cuts to a wide shot, and there's CAT scan machines.
There's like trucks pulling up, dropping off like CAT scans and MRI machines.
And they're wheeling them up. Splayed all throughout the house.
He sells all of his furniture to afford more CAT scan
there's
machines.
There's five on the roofs of each of the houses.
There's CAT scan machines in the lawn, on the roofs, in every room of the house. Both of their wives leave them and take the kids because they are losing all their possessions to buy more CAT scan machines.
The same shot. Both cars are going away because both wives and children of the neighbors are leaving them at the same time. We cut to when he hits rock bottom and he's like waking up on an MRI machine with a slice of pizza somewhere
it's like
close by.
Slabbed off of it.
And so he goes to a bar.
Yeah.
And that's where he meets up with
his neighbor.
And they're having a good time. They're drinking some beers, and then
they both reconcile in their passion for the CAT scan machines and one upping each other.
And while we're here, we cut to
meanwhile
a school field trip,
a disaster at the nuclear power plant, with a bunch of kids trapped in the radiation room.
And so they're all like sick of radiation poisoning. And they're like, oh my God, what are we going to do to save all of these kids? And they're like, if only there was a place where there was like so many MRI CAT scans that we could scan to see if they have radiation poisoning.
Yeah.
And they're like, Jimmy, doesn't your dad own like 20 CAT scans? Yeah.
He's like, yes, he does. And so all the kids get on the bus and they drive to the house where all the CAT scan machines are.
But they're not home.
Yeah.
And so they keep banging on the doors. They're like, let us in.
Let us get the CAT scan machines. And then all the kids drop dead.
Like, if they have radiation poisoning, what will a CAT scan do?
It's never quite explained exactly what the CAT scan's going to do.
It's just going to tell them if they have radiation poisoning.
But it's essential to save these kids. They all drop dead in this lawn.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we keep cutting back to these two guys sharing beers and shots.
But they keep trying to one-up each other again.
Yeah, and just getting more and more drunk.
Yeah.
Because they need to covet or to outdo each other. Then they see on the news that there's a bunch of dead kids in their lawn because they weren't home and all the CAT scan machines were needed. And they're both like, I think it's time to go home. And so they go home, and that's where we end the short.
Yeah.
They coveted the neighbor's good and a bunch of kids died. The next, Paul Rudd does some stuff again. I kind of lose track of the Paul Rudd of it all.
I know.
We get back to the segment that's about him.
Adultery.
Yeah.
Yeah. This one is, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife.
Yes.
Okay.
Which
thou
is
shalt not covet
very smart.
Thy neighbor's wife.
Yes.
You have to think. Okay. Yeah. So this is like, you can't look at your bro's girl and be like, man, I want her.
Yeah.
That's the sin, right? Yes. So like, where can we make that a funny comedic segment? We cut
prison.
To the prison.
with the doctor.
Ladies and gentlemen of the audience, I've already gathered of where this is going,
yes.
And you're screaming, no, 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 no,
that is
no.
Exactly
that is exactly where this is going. Because we're introduced back to the doctor.
Yes.
Who committed the murder against the dude's wife.
He goofed.
The goof.
Yeah.
Don't know why he got life in prison. It was just a goof.
Just a goof.
And so he is another inmate's bitch where he's getting raped all the time, essentially. And he says it. He's like, you know, it's like I've kind of been at peace with I don't know what his other the former inmate who he's currently getting raped by, but he's like, but you know it's like a little bit of a commitment, right? But then we're introduced to Rob Corddry, who's another prison inmate who looks at the doctor, the murdering doctor, and eventually they start to like kind of flirt a little bit.
Yeah,
and Rob Corddry's like, listen, I know you're with that other guy. I know he rapes you every night, but can I tell you something? There are times I have dreams of pinning you up against a wall and just mercilessly raping you.
Yeah.
Without your consent, of course.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh man, Rob, as much as I would love for you to just like rail me every night without my consent.
Yeah.
I just don't know if I can do that too.
Yeah. He's specifically like, I'm this guy's bitch already. I don't know if I want to be your bitch.
Yeah.
That's the wording.
They're talking about it like as if he's like in a committed relationship.
Yeah, he's in a committed relationship with this one tough prisoner who's been raping him every night.
Yeah. But eventually he goes back to his jail cell, the doctor, and he tells the inmate, he's like, hey, I don't think I want to be your bitch anymore. And so the
inmate...
have
an emotional breakup.
Like slaps him and he's like, nah, it's actually okay. I understand. And then he goes to Rob Corddry's jail cell. And then we cut to a prison guard walking down the hall, and you just hear the sound of a man getting raped brutally.
Yes.
And he walks by the cell, and you see, of course, they're
in the
not consensual sex.
Yeah.
And then the prison guard turns to the camera and being like, love.
Yeah.
And he gives like a weird little monologue, and then that's the end of the segment.
He quotes like Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Very bizarre.
I had a good time at that one.
Might be the sweatiest, actually.
It was very wrong, very raunchy,
yeah.
But it was...
It's like, it's funny. It's a funny bit.
It's a very dark humor funny.
Yeah. It's like, kind of, you don't expect this movie to have, like, a dark segment like that. Because, like, it has, for the most part, like, even in the one about murder, it's, like, very silly murder.
Yeah.
You don't expect a segment that is, like, very depraved and dark to come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Because the next segment's, like, still depraved and dark, but not, like, quite that level.
Yeah,
this is like very nonchalant humor about prison rape.
Yeah. The next segment is Thou Shall Not Steal. And we're back with Winona Ryder. And Winona at this point is married to the TV anchor.
Yes. This is like Winona's moment to shine.
Yeah.
And I think she's really funny in this. And she's very committed.
Love her in this segment. Yes. I was floored.
This is like a great reminder that even though we're in a pretty dark age of her career, she can still bring it. And she will bring it.
I think the biggest lesson I'm learning from this segment is like, the one sin Winona, I don't think is capable of making comparatively to like our other actors is ego. I think you cannot say yes to this having like a big ego of yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but like, I don't know. This is definitely like reading the script and being like, okay,
I would say
I'm going to do this.
Winona, I'm going to reframe it as Winona will never check out. Like,
yeah,
she's
sure.
Basically always going to be committed to the thing, no matter what it is. Even if she thinks it's beneath
her.
Shall we
tell the audience what it is?
Even if she thinks it's beneath her, she's going to do it with great gusto. So she's married to the TV anchorman. This is Thou Shall Not Steal.
Yeah.
She comes across on their honeymoon
a ventriloquist.
The ventriloquist from section one, very briefly.
Yeah, who has his dummy.
With his puppet.
And we cut to Winona, who is enamored.
Yeah. Not with the ventriloquist, but with the puppet.
With the puppet.
Yes.
She steals the puppet.
Yes.
She like...
No, she has an affair with the puppet first.
No,
she does
steal
it.
She steals the puppet first.
Yeah.
And then goes to a motel room.
Yeah.
And fucks the puppet.
Yes.
And there's not like a... She takes her clothes off and we cut to black. No, she fucks.
She's like, you want to get that wood pretty hard? She's so committed.
She's so committed.
Like, she's having this secret affair with this puppet that her husband doesn't know about.
Yeah.
She is going all in on this puppet.
Going hard.
Yes. Like, prolonged shots of her just, like, ravaging
into this puppet. And then the door, there's a knock at the door, and then it bursts open.
Yeah.
It's her husband.
Yes.
Who sees her on top of a puppet.
Yes.
He's like, oh my God.
And he intervenes and gives the puppet back to the ventriloquist.
Yeah. And then the ventriloquist like runs into the bathroom with the puppet. Yeah. It's like, why? How could this happen? It's like, and then the dummy, he's working the dummy.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you see, you know, love in some ways.
Yeah.
And then he goes into another fucking like Shakespeare-esque monologue about
because
love.
He returns the puppet to her.
He returns the puppet to her.
Yes. And it's like, you have a true love that I can't have with him.
Yeah.
And she like fully leaves her husband
for
the puppet.
For the puppet.
Yes. And this is like the raunchiest section of the show. And one of the two aggressors is a puppet.
Yes.
I very much enjoyed it.
I love it.
And like we said, Winona's very committed in this whole thing.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, I'll fuck the puppet. I'll do it.
The next segment is Thou Shall Not Bear False Witness.
Yes.
And we're back with a ventriloquist.
Yeah, he's lost the dummy and he's now...
he's a homeless heroin addict.
Heroin addict living in a trap house.
And so he is asking one of the other homeless guys, they're in a trap house, and he asks one of the other homeless guys if he has some heroin on him. And he gives him, it's like, here, this is from, what do they call it? The Lion Rhino.
Yeah.
It's like, well... Is this fine? It's like, oh yeah, it's Lion Rhino. It's like, well, who's Lion Rhino? We go into this animated sequence.
Yeah, it's like flash animation. It's like that 2007 flash animation you'd see on early YouTube.
And it's this right, and it's like an animated rhino.
Yes.
And he lies.
Yeah.
And gets himself into like a bunch of...
He just keeps building his lies to the extent no one believes him. It's like the Boy Who Cried Wolf.
Yeah.
Story.
Exactly.
But it's like this animated world with all these various animals fucking around and hooting and hollering. And then eventually he comes across a band of wiener dogs.
Yeah.
That are intent on infecting people with STDs.
Yeah.
And he's the only one who knows this. And so he tries to tell everyone, oh my God, don't have sex with these wiener dogs. And nobody believes him. And the wiener dogs have an orgy with the entire town.
and everybody gets an STD.
Yeah, and they all die.
Yeah.
And then the wiener dogs hop into their jet and fly away, leaving the rhinoceros alone in this town. And they say he wanders the world and eventually settled in Los Angeles.
And sells drugs.
Yeah, and he sells drugs now.
And then the door opens and in walks in a real life person.
Yeah, in the exact same outfit as the rhino.
Yeah. And he takes a dump on the floor. Yes. Because that's the thing the rhino does.
He keeps laying dumps and a daffodil pops out of it.
Yeah. And that's the segment.
Yeah, that's the segment. Thou shalt not bear false witness because he was lying.
Yeah.
Get it? He was lying. We're back with Paul Rudd. who's has been presenting all these stories to us, but he has his own dilemma. He has to choose between Famke Janssen and his mistress, Jessica Alba.
No, he's married. So we cut to New York, and it's Paul Rudd walking down the street, and Famke Janssen appears, and he's like, oh, I'm actually married to Diane Wiest.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, well, like, cheat on Diane Wiest with me. It's like, I'll take care of it. Yeah. He calls Diane Wiest, who we never hear on the phone.
Yeah.
And then he's like, yeah, so this isn't working out. Yeah. Okay.
Remember my old wife?
We'll send you the papers. We'll figure it out. And then he gets the phone. It's like, it's all taken care of.
Yeah. We can get back together.
And they get back together.
Yeah. Because he calls off Jessica Alba, but Famke Janssen has already left him at that point. And he ended up just marrying Diane Wiest.
Yeah.
Which is a good bit. I do like that he's married to Diane Wiest. But it's one of those segments that's really short.
And
some of the sections are like under 5 minutes, and this is one of them.
Yeah.
Pretty quick.
And this one's not really that funny.
It's not that much to it.
Yeah.
Not a lot of meat on the bone.
The last one is Remember the Sabbath and Keep It Holy.
Yeah, which is the one where you're like, all right, well, what are we going to do here?
We cut to this is the
husband from the Jesus story.
Yes.
Whose wife is now goes to church every Sunday with their family.
Yes.
She, you know, wants to be close to Jesus.
Wants to be very close to Jesus.
Yeah, because she's keeping his name holy.
And so the husband at this point, like, they wake up and he's still not dressed. And he's like, and he fakes being sick so he doesn't have to go to church.
Yes.
Haven't we all? And then, so he's home at church and then he decides to get naked in his house. And then.
He likes it.
He likes it. It makes him feel free.
Yeah.
But then he starts to have some friends over.
And they're all, he tells them to be naked too.
Yeah. And then eventually it grows and grows and grows until he has a
20 to 30 naked men in his house every Sunday morning.
Yeah. And then
he keeps insisting, we're not gay. We just like being naked.
Yeah. And you know, it could be healthy.
Yeah.
It's like it's a masculine vulnerability thing.
Yeah.
Maybe
he's onto something.
Maybe he's onto something there.
But
Jeff, do you want to start getting naked every Sunday?
No.
We could do the podcast naked.
We do the podcast fully nude.
Take off your pants.
All right, fine. Here we go.
Anyway.
Oh, they it's an important note that they listen to Roberta Flack as they walk around naked.
Yes.
But he just like, he's at home with his 20 to 30 guys and he sees that his wife is home early from church.
And he tries to hide everybody.
Yeah. And they all do successfully hide.
Yeah.
Like behind there's like some guys who are hidden within the infrastructure of the couch, which I really enjoyed.
It's really good. And then he puts on a robe and then the wife comes in. It's like, is everything okay? And he's like, no, I gotta be honest with you. All the naked guys come out.
It's a really funny shot because like they have all successfully hidden them within the frame. Like you can't see any other guys.
Yeah.
The joke is not that they're poorly hidden. The joke is that they're very well hidden.
Yeah.
So that when he says guys come out, like the couch is literally falling apart as if they were the skeletal inside of the couch.
Yes. It's really
and like
good.
They're emerging from closets and from the ceiling.
And so then they're surrounded by all these naked men.
Yeah.
And she says, and babe, and he takes off his robe. Yeah. It's like, this is what I like to do every Sunday. It's like, you bring all these naked men to my house on the Lord's day.
Yeah.
It's like, if you do this ever again, I will divorce you and leave. And then I don't know how this
There's
ends.
A musical number.
Right. There is
all the guys sing. They perform a song, like a song written for the movie. I cannot remember what the exact lyrics are, but it's about being, you know, yourself and enjoying your Sundays.
And then it goes through dancing naked.
Yeah, and it starts from all these naked men dancing, and it goes through all the characters from the various segments.
Yes.
And at one point, like, the screen opens up like a door and Winona's like a rock star on a stage.
Yes.
And she's just singing about how much she wants to fuck that puppet.
Yes.
And she's crushing it.
And everybody,
Paul Rudd emerges and she and him do a duet.
Yeah. Everybody kind of gets their own little segment here on this like punk rock stage.
Yeah.
And then
including the rhinoceros.
Yes. Including the rhinoceros. And then I think Paul Rudd's the one that signs us all out.
Yes.
Well,
he sings it. He's like, you learned some lessons and you had some fun. This has been the 10.
Of dung. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
And then the movie's over.
Yes.
That's the 10.
That is the 10.
It's been longer than I thought.
Yeah, I mean, we had to summarize a lot.
But yeah, that's the 10. Do you have any post-text for us, Jeff?
So movie, you know, it's a small theatrical release, but it's mostly just kind of like a home video thing.
Yeah.
It airs at Sundance.
Gets a standing ovation.
A 2-hour standing ovation. No.
Everybody takes their clothes off.
Yeah, they all dance nude.
And they start shitting on the floor. And daffodils pop up.
They learn valuable lessons.
Yeah.
But it comes out very limited release. Makes under $1 million.
Yeah.
Because it's not like a wide release.
Right. It's not that kind of movie.
It's just kind of it was shot for very cheap. I have the list of the exact budget here, I think.
Oh, wow.
Da-da-da-da-da.
Surprised.
Under $4 million. So, like, it still lost money on, like, theaters, but I'm sure, like, it probably gets released direct-to-video and DVD. And all.
Yeah.
That's its main avenue of release.
Yeah.
Never a big hit, but I'm sure it wasn't, like, a major loss to anyone involved in it.
So, we're back in, like, last week, I would say, was when the first Winona Ryder coming back movie, right?
Yeah.
Because
Darwin Awards like kind of doesn't count.
Darwin Awards kind of doesn't count, and Heart is Deceitful was a delayed release.
Yeah, delayed release.
So this is like the second movie in her return to Hollywood era. And you know, I'm just looking at the next few bits that we got to cover. We got a few rough patches that we're gonna have to talk about. I'm seeing a lot of fours and fives on IMDb, Jeff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, then the run that she's in is like she's intermittently getting some like bigger movies,
But
in small roles. But
small
then
roles.
All of the things that she's popping up in a major way, like they're really small.
Yeah,
they're in this vein.
Yeah.
And, like, she's obviously, like, the seventh most important person in this, like, ensemble comedy.
Yeah.
But her career is really at a place where, like, this is the type of movie she's doing right now. And then she'll have supporting roles in maybe some bigger things, like, you know, Scanner Darkly or Star Trek or something.
And it's going to be that way
because
for...
Because there are directors who know her and want her in their movies. And that's really what her, like, what saves her.
Yeah.
Is, like, J.J. Abrams, like, I loved Winona Ryder growing up. Let's put her in Star Trek.
Yeah.
Darren Aronofsky's like, Winona Ryder is great. I'll put her in Black Swan. But then in between those, she's just doing your like The Private Lives of Pippa Lee.
Sex and Death 101.
The Informers. The Last Word. These aren't big roles for her. She's just kind of existing as an actor in Hollywood.
Yeah.
This is like working actor territory.
Yeah.
But you know, she gets out of it eventually. Hopefully.
I mean, like, in terms of movies.
Yeah, in terms of movies, maybe not necessarily as much. But yeah. There are some better things coming down the pike.
Yeah.
At least movies of budget.
That was the 10, ladies and gentlemen.
This movie doesn't do anything for that. It's just, she's a working actor at this point, and this is a movie she's in.
Yeah.
In regards to, like, David Wayne and all that, like, he goes on to have a very successful career after this.
Yes.
There's another movie coming out the next year. Role Models that people like. I was told I should watch it. He directs Wanderlust.
No shit.
Yeah.
He did Wanderlust?
Yeah. And then they came together. He works with Paul Rudd in basically all these things.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Finally, Futile and Stupid Gesture was his most recent movie, which was the Netflix movie about the making of the National Lampoon, or the founding of them.
Oh, cool.
And then he has a new show coming up pretty soon at some point that I worked on. But nice. That's all I can say about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's this movie.
Take us home.
Country Roads. Thank you for listening to this episode on the 10. Hope you enjoyed it. It was very hard to find. If you were able to find it, I commendations to you. Next week, we'll be talking about Sex and Death 101.
Where Winona plays Death Nell.
Yeah, sure to be a hit. It's going to be great.
It's going to be
awesome.
You're
going to love it.
I'm looking forward to it.
But in the meantime, please remember to rate, review, and subscribe on whatever platform you're listening on. As a reminder, we're available on Spotify Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Amazon Music, anywhere where you can find a podcast. There's some really weird ones we found out that we're on recently.
Very
which
weird
is fun.
Ones, yeah.
You can pop to our Reddit, @Trollting, @TrollTingPod, Twitter, Instagram, Blue Sky Threads, TrollTingPodcast@gmail.com. If you want to email me something, I'll answer it. @JeffWSween on Twitter for me. Special thanks, as always, to Becca for our graphic design, Michael Van Bodum Smith for the theme music. That's Taking You Out. Have a great week, folks.